I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is primarily created, the Gadigal of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to elders both past and present and extend that respect to all First Nations people listening today.
And we're going to write a story to show together, aren't we?
Well, that's right. I mean, we're saying it here now on recording.
We don't care if we're downstairs at Belvoir or over there at Darlinghurst.
Yeah, look, or upstairs Belvoir, you know, whatever. Dream big. My name's Emily McKnight, and this is An Actor Survives, a podcast that digs deep into Australia's most creative minds to uncover the tools you need to survive a career as an actor.
Hello, how are you, everybody out there in Actor Survive World? Oh, mate, I'll tell you what, I had to go and walk my son's dog today, and it just dragged me all the way through Redfern Park, and I nearly didn't make it here tonight, but I'm here.
You are here, and it's very exciting. So welcome,
hey,
Billy,
good to be here.
To An Actor Survives. And I would love to know, how long have you been an actor, and when did you first feel you could call yourself an actor?
Mate, we've been acting all our lives, since we were kids, you know. I mean,
yeah,
just doing the dress-ups at home. I mean, I can remember my cousins putting me uncle's suits on, and we'd be all playing the old, you know, Here Comes the Bride and all that stuff.
So right.
That were the good old days, mate. That was... I think I was three, and then a little bit at school, but not a lot at school. But I started out in 1988. Started out with a 12-month traineeship at West End in Brisbane. That was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. I wasn't alive in 1988.
Where were you then, Emily?
I was born in 89.
Well, you were just on the way coming through.
That's
mate.
Right, I was
and
on
now
the way.
I'm just passing through. So I started out in this traineeship. Well, before that I was doing the old sports thing, you know, footy, cricket, boxing, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you get old and you've got to look for a real job because... when your footy career goes, it's like, oh, we've got no more work left for you, Bill. So, anyway, I looked for this job on the, in them days at Centrelink, it was CES. They'd have the jobs advertised on the wall, on the board. And there was two jobs. So there was one for a kitchen hand and the other one was for an Aboriginal trainee theatre worker. But I went for the kitchen hand job.
Right, I was expecting you to go, so I took the theatre job and the rest
Mate,
is history.
Oh, it was 88.
You took the kitchen job and the rest
I'm
is history.
I'm a slushy through and through, an old dish hand, and I used to work at Albion Park Paceway in the kitchen. Beautiful food in there. Just washing and stacking dishes for about 3 weeks, and I was... looking for this, getting out of there. And anyway, this last week I decided I'd leave this job and I was walking from the valley down to Bricky Creek in Brisbane and then one weekend, it was a Saturday, and then I saw these cops coming up the road on their bikes and cars, the sirens were blaring, and then this old English car with the Queen and and I was the only one on the street, and it was like, she gave me a wave. She was off to the Commonwealth Games in 88, remember, at Brisbane?
Right.
Yeah, so I was just, and here's the Queen coming for, Bill, you better take that job. No, she didn't stop. It was like, that's the Queen. So anyway, it's left that job, and then I went back, and I was at the Centrelink, and I said, mate, I'll have a look at that trainee theatre working job.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, you've got to go for an audition. So I went over the West End It was, the venue was a paint factory, and I walked past this paint factory, and I said, that's not a theatre space. And next minute I can hear that, Billy, come here, come here. And I took off. There was four women chasing me out the street. I thought they must have thought I'd stolen their handbags. No, you come for the audition, didn't you? So anyway, did the audition. Don't call us, we'll call you.
Yeah.
And then I've moved out to Inala and still on Centrelink, and then it would have been 6 weeks later they said, Billy, you got this job, come in. But that weekend they were having a benefit night, and anyway, this other guy in the troupe, he said, oh, Bill, can you get some marijuana for us out? Is this a marijuana show? Sorry. Sorry about
that. That's it,
no,
it's fine.
No, and he gave me $400, but I never went back.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I just stayed out there, and then it would have been a good 3 months later that the artistic director, manager, she came looking for me.
Right.
And she saw me in the suburbs of Inala. I was sitting in the garage bonging on and drinking with me cousins, and she stopped and she said, Billy. And we all looked up and she said, get in the car now. You got to finish this traineeship off. Peter's not worried about $400. Come on. He said, get on a repayment plan. Come and live with me boyfriend in Highgate Hill. And I look at my cousin. I said, hey, go on, Bill. Get in the car. And I got in the car, went and lived with the boyfriend, finished a 12-month traineeship. They employed me for the next 18 months.
Wow.
And became a company member doing company and community shows. We did the 88 Expo show called Under Wraps Community Show. It's pretty good about real estate outpricing everyone in West End, which is going through the roof still. I've finished that traineeship. I end up becoming freelance, and then my old boss, she's now the boss of programs at the Sydney Opera House.
Wow. From that traineeship?
From the old days at West End. Yeah, I got a phone call from Lydia Miller. It was like, Bill, come down. We've sacked the other actor. We need you. And
wow. To
Sydney,
you mean?
To Sydney.
So, and when was this?
That was in 92.
Right.
Three. Anyway, and then living above the chemist shop in Redfern Street with the old actor friend of mine, Kevin Smith, rest in peace. We did a lot of shows together. We toured Germany and a lot of good stuff.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, we went over there with a show called The Aboriginal Protesters Confront the Year of the Republic 2000. It was a play within a play. We wore masks for the Heiner Müller text, the German writer, and then we took them off and became blackfellas. I said, he can't write. We got a trip to Weimar and München.
Wow.
Yeah, that was back in 96. So, it was a while ago. I
mean, and have you performed much else overseas apart from that trip?
Not with that show, but I had a little show. I was doing presentation readings of a play that I've written called Cuz, all about our cousins and how we're all related. And so I went to a couple of festival readings, like went to the one in Canada, Native Earth Theatre Company, that's a First Nation mob, and also to the Kai Mau Festival in Wellington in New Zealand with Mugland Performing Arts Company. They took me on board and took it over there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you do much other writing So you've written that play?
Oh, it's sort of still out there. I did a one-man show too. I've written ages ago, but it's still unfinished. I sort of performed it here and there, called Rations.
Mm.
It's about the journey of a guy called Billy Bundy with his imaginary dog travelling from the bush to the city.
Wow. Yeah.
Cool, that's Rations, cool. Yeah.
And do you think do you have any kind of ideas to write more, or are you mostly just focusing on the performing side of things?
Mostly performing, but definitely still keen to do other writings. I've worked with a group from South Coast called Black Wallaby that we go into junior jail.
Wow.
Twice a year, and we help write stories with the inmates.
Wow, that's a great thing to do.
Yeah, so that should need to be done in every jail, and women's too.
Yeah.
With the new Prime Minister, anything could be possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot more possibility in general for us now. Yeah.
And then I met the kid's mum.
Yeah. In Sydney.
Still. Yeah, she was... funny how we met. It was like, I finished doing the show at my first show at Belvoir in 93 called Gungies.
Wow, so hang on. So your first show at Belvoir was at 93.
Yeah.
And you just did one at the end of last year, 2021.
Yes.
So you have like quite a long history with that company.
I do. Wow. I've done shows downstairs and upstairs and yeah, so the Belvoir was the old Belvoir, you walked down the stairs and around the back. It was never straight into the Belvoir.
Yeah.
Belvoir was around the back in the old days, and the office was next to the toilets.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't down the road.
And so you did that internship and then you kind of went straight into work. Have you done any kind of other acting study or taken any classes or anything, or has it all been learn on the job for you?
Pretty much learning on the job, but there was also some classes, some opportunities I can work with people that develop your skills a bit more, like James McCackney. He was very good one-on-one teacher that helped me do my little one-man show.
Cool, yeah.
And other voice teachers, like I never had a theatre voice that could project to the back.
Yeah.
I was just like that, man. I didn't know how to enunciate your voice like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to people at the back.
Yes.
Later on, it was like you also got inspired because I went to several of the Black Playwrights Conference, like, in 89, we went to Macquarie University and Aunty Ujirinu Nuckle was a doctorate there, and we did 26 plays in 13 days, like two plays every night.
Mm.
Yeah, that was a pinnacle too. That was a turning point of, you know, we've got to have a stage, we've got to have a voice.
Yeah. And so that's amazing. So that's in 1989.
Yeah.
That kind of turning point. For me, Indigenous voices and...
Yeah, that was very inspirational. Like, yeah. We're all in Sydney, wide-eyed kids. I'm just a kid from the bush, back box of Queensland.
And you've done a fair share of stage and screen. Do you have a kind of ambition to do more of one or the other, or are you... Oh, and voiceover too, you were just saying.
Yeah.
So are you kind of trying to head in one direction, or are you just like... No,
just universal, because it's work.
Yeah.
And
storytelling.
I'm pretty sure that you can't knock that back if your agent's ringing you up going...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So last week, the week before last, I was working in junior jail, and then the next... That weekend I was in Alice Springs and doing health messages for people to get their free flu shots and jabs. And the week before that I was over at Hyde Park Barracks. We're rehearsing a new kids show. Just trying to inspire the next generation, matey. That's about it. Yeah. And you know, very important thing that Aunty Ujuru, New Knuckles, said to me is record your history, Billy.
Yeah,
some of that. Did you get the training through the people who's done it? And one very good lesson I learnt from a very well-respected Shakespearean teacher from England, Cicely Berry.
Oh, yes.
Auntie I've got half Cicely.
Her books up on that shelf.
What?
Yeah.
Well, she's come over home for Poyala.
Right.
Old Cicely, yeah, and she said, Billy, suit the action to the word. That's all she said.
Yeah, that's what Shakespeare said too, of course.
Yeah. So I didn't know. She must have thought I was Billy Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. It's very similar.
Yeah, I said, no, that's William.
And you said you were a writer. And
Billy. But also like writing short stories.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I've films.
Oh, short films, right?
Yeah. I'm right into doing let's get the camera and shoot it, man.
That's cool. And so if you make one of those, where does it go? Do you have like a YouTube channel or something?
Yeah, there was a famous actor, writer, director called Vincent Stone,
mm-hmm.
Vince McManus. He started this group called Lights, Camera, Action, and he's still got that group that has a lot of films from Redfern on it.
Cool.
It's really good.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you've got an agent that calls you. Was that agent someone that you got straight away when you moved to Sydney, or have you had multiple agents?
No, well, I was living with my old mate Smitty, and he said, come join my agent. He said, that right. way, if I miss out, you get it. We'll still get a drink. So we worked it out, but... sometimes in acting, and you just go through the lull times, and you know, right. if you've got the family and the kids, it's pretty well obvious you've got to go and get a job.
That's it.
Some of the other stuff too. If you're single and you've got groups of friends, you can still keep creating, which is really good too.
But if you've got to feed the family,
then you've got to eat too. I mean,
yeah.
There was always a joke about you could survive in Sydney in the old days because you just follow the darts comp around and the pool comp around, and every night they'd bring out the sausages and so you'd get a feed that way. But obviously, times have changed. you can go and get a food hamper down at Wesley United Church or something. So hopefully people aren't out there starving.
Yeah. Course, yeah.
Yeah, but work, that's the go, and then it just takes you away, and then you got to climb off the floor to get back in the ring, and then throw your hat in the ring again, and then it was fortunate I went for an audition once with McGregor's, and they said, have you got an agent, Billy? I said, no. I said, we'll get you one.
Oh,
and
great.
So I ended up with Catherine Dodd at Liberty Arts Management. So very fortunate. I just sort of kept it to myself that I could find work.
Yeah.
Because I've, been around for a little bit, and it's like there's a bit of a status game too in the industry.
Oh. As in you have high status, so.
No, it's like. The joke when Smitty and I, it's like, if I don't get it, you'll get it, bud.
Yes.
And no, I don't have to deal with that. But there's a status always. If it's not Uncle Jack, up the top there, then it's...
Oh, I see.
Yeah, with the acting, if you didn't come from Nyla, then they go back down to...
Yeah, right.
I really feel for the younger generation. They just got to keep going and just keep knocking on the door and even write their own little stories, whether it's for theatre or for kids' shows at schools or...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. How often do you kind of audition for things?
Twice a week, maybe.
That's pretty good.
Or maybe sometimes, like, I always find there's beginning of the year is really slow.
Yeah.
March it picks up, and then, but that's when you do lots of auditions then, and then you just wait for the, oh, we're not starting till May.
Yeah. And how do you go when you don't get the job? How do you kind of cope with that?
We just support each other for the next sister or the next brother or auntie or uncle, and you beauty, you know, I mean.
Yeah, cool.
If some of those kids don't get a Logie for that, mate, I'm going to go down there and knock on their door, buddy.
Yeah.
Penniless fellas, you can't, yeah.
That's cool. So it's about building that community and supporting each other.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it's 50 years of black theatre this year.
That's awesome.
And, you know, Brian Brown was involved with that. Sigrid Thornton was involved with that.
Mm.
And it's like I've been part of that for 33 years. So,
wow.
I just can't wait for the next generation to come through. I know for a fact that there's 21 students at NIDA now. First, second, third, fourth year, whatever the years they stay there for. Hmm. But, yeah, they're over there and...
That's great.
That's
yeah.
like, what? You know, you could count them on one hand, but back in the old days, I mean, yeah. Glenn Shea, he came through there. It's all I knew.
Yeah.
So just keep working, keep throwing your hat in the ring and...
Yeah.
Yeah, creating.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to go and get that job, mate, then you got to go and get a job, you know.
Yeah.
Whether that's unloading containers or working a warehouse.
Yeah, whatever it is. What would you say has been the most challenging role of your career?
I think it was the one I did in Brisbane called Cherry Pickers. The monologue was 49 or 59 pages.
The monologue was?
That's what I had to learn. And if I got it wrong, I had to start again in the rehearsals. That was tough.
That sounds tough.
yeah, that was really tough. And it was the very first play ever written, Aboriginal play.
Wow.
Cherry Pickers.
And was this the first production of it?
It was the very first production of it by a theatre company in Brisbane that's no longer existing. But we did it at the Metro Arts in Brisbane. It was hectic, but yeah, we got there in the end. But that's the beauty about the theatre, that you've had that trust and family on there. That's why I prefer theatre than the films. You're just sort of in and out. It's just a couple of lines and you're gone.
Yeah. What does success mean to you?
Success is if one person just... is educated from the stories that we tell them, then we've done our job.
Oh, what a great answer.
I'm really keen on the ideas of just, you know, creating those new stories and then telling those stories. That's what I'm excited about. I always got scared about writing for more than five people because you won't get funding.
Right.
That was always hard. So it was always based between just a small group of people. Mm. But just to help the writer and, you know, to tell those stories, that's the main point, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we are oral historians.
Well, yes.
The oldest oral storytellers in the world.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you go about when you have a role and you're working on it? Do you have like a method that you follow or anything like that?
Yeah, you get into all these characters, especially at my age, that you met over your life, and then even, I'm at the stage now, I'm getting the uncle parts now. I don't get the nephew roles anymore. But definitely the uncles, I have lots of fun.
Yeah.
Doing all those sorts of fellas.
So you sort of base it on people you know?
Yeah, it's pretty well, yeah.
Is that what you did on Black Comedy?
Oh, no, I was doing comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I was doing the Billy Mack special.
Oh, the I see.
Yeah, comedy, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, just have fun there and then, yeah, I just love Blackfellas' comic ways. It's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What are your top five survival tips?
Okay. Well, not in preference in the orders, but definitely the one that you love when you go to the theatre and even when you're warming up. And the best one is give yourself a hug.
Oh.
And tell yourself that you're a very important person. So, and you do that all together.
That's great.
Yeah. You tell your students that. Give yourself a hug 3 times and say you're a very important person. But the 3rd time, you say it out loud. 2 is keep throwing your hat in the ring. Keep throwing that hat in the ring. There's a story out there for you. Because, you know, if someone else is busy, you're the next in line. You got to be ready.
That's right. Yeah.
That's it.
And we're definitely learning that at the moment with all the COVID stuff and everything, like understudies and...
Yeah, yeah.
So many people being called upon.
And just be ready. It's a long, long road. It's a long road. Otherwise, I'll never work with that person ever again. But you do in the end. Because you're always going to say... I'm working on a show. I don't have to go home with the other person. That's a good one.
Yeah.
And keep that in check. Yeah, just learn to listen. I think that's a good one. It's like...
That's a really good one.
Yeah, you just got to really learn to listen to the other people on stage talk and then...
But also learn to listen in real life, like in rehearsals.
Yeah.
And listening to other people's stories and giving that space.
Definitely, and I suppose this one here is that we all knew growing up in the arts that probably the younger ones wouldn't know is that cast and crew do not screw. That's an old one.
Right.
It's a golden rule. sorry. Yeah, I mean, it defeats all the trust in the family thing, you know.
Yeah.
You can, you know, in the workplace is that's, where you want to feel safe.
That's right.
And people get jealous of this industry real quick, too, and it's like quick to knock you down.
Yeah.
But you got to get back up and up there for thinking, down there for dancing, over there for romancing, mate. That's what I tell my boxers. Sorry.
That's great. Oh, this is cool.
Yes. This is my old circular one.
That's awesome.
Cut ditch. Yadaki. But this is a good sound too. I'll put this the old backpack ditch. But have you ever heard the Dreamtime story?
About?
The Yadaki, the ditch.
No.
So what happened is a long time ago, this old fella sitting on the cliff. And he's looking out across the ocean and he sees this big whale coming up to him. And he was blowing that water out of the back of his spout. And he was watching him for days. He said, I know how he does that. So the old fella started walking home to his camp and he saw all these tiny little termites climbing up into the tree and they disappear. So he ran over the tree. He put his ear next to the ditch. To the branch, and he tapped it, and it was hollow. So he ripped that branch off the tree. He looked inside, and saw all those termites. So he pointed them up to the sky. And he blew all those termites up in the sky, and that's how come we've got the Milky Way.
Ah.
A very old Dreamtime story.
I like that.
And if he ever forgets, he can put his ear next to your didgeridoo and he can hear the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he remembers the whale. Yeah. And then he remembers the termites.
Oh,
and he
remembers the whale. I love that story. That's great.
Mate, I'm just going to sing a farewell song for you.
Oh, yeah?
An old Waka Waka song from up in southeast Queensland. I've always had permission to sing it too.
Yeah. Yes.
Round one. Gary in the Nami, Jojo and Arani. Gary in the Nami, Gary in the Nami, Jojo and Arani. Gary in the Nami, Gary in the Nami, Jojo and Arani. Gary in the Nami, Gary in the Nami, Jojo and Arani.
Yes, that was amazing. Thank you.
That's the welcome farewell. See you next episode.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of An Actor Survives with me, Emily McKnight. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Instagram, and share with your friends. Your support means a lot. Thanks. The music used in this podcast is an excerpt from Saw, a marimba concerto by Robert Otomo.